Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight 202, recording this on Thursday, the 9th of February, 2012, Bell Week. We're a bit out of sync, really, in terms of days of the week, aren't we, Rafe?
Well, I think we're only 1 or 2 days out now, and finally catching up from the Christmas period as we get well into February.
Yeah, we also have on the call Mr. Ewan Spence up in Edinburgh.
It's like 6 weeks since Christmas. How can we still be using Christmas as an excuse? I mean, are we British or something?
Yeah. Talking of British, we do have David Gill set up in Hull.
Hello, Steve, and hello, everyone else. And it's a very exciting week, isn't it? Because Bell's here.
Indeed. But before we get to that, and just introducing the other voice you heard at the beginning of the podcast, Mr. Rafe Blanford, we've had the Nokia 500 in for, well, a few weeks now, Rafe. But you've got your first video up, and I'm started my full text review in earnest. It's very ashamedly a budget Symbian smartphone, but certainly interesting in its own way. Can you perhaps summarise your thoughts on the video in a minute or so?
Just trying to do it quickly. Low-cost device, which has a surprising number of hardware features that you'd expect from the higher-end devices. So remarkably good value for money. As you might expect, there are compromises made. That's mainly around materials, although I did think the actual design and the sort of build quality was very good indeed. It's certainly more robust than some of the devices you get at this price. But sort of the big thing I think people need to be aware of, aside from obvious things like small screen and maybe lower specification screen technology, is the absence of a graphics accelerator chip. That means it uses some of the RAM in the device for doing graphics intensive things like games. It does mean it can't record HD video and will have some problems playing it back as well. But I think, given the compromise, this is a device that comes in 150 euros, I think it is, before tax and subsidies. It's available in the UK, for example, as £100 pay as you go. So, quite considerably reduced on the other Symbian 3 devices. So with that caveat in mind, I actually think, fantastic value. The first version of the software, which is actually the one we're running on the Nokia 500, does have a few problems. That's version 10. Version 11 is meant to be much more stable, but I know Steve's going to talk a little bit about that in the review. But I think, you have to look at this in the context of the device. Power users will immediately go, nope, not interested. But others are going to like the Express On covers that this has and the price point. So I certainly think it's a reasonable entry in this very low-end smartphone space.
Yeah, I think my feeling is that it's really aimed at people who have definitely moved up from a feature phone and aren't really wanting something that's a full smartphone. Just an example is what perfect, for a non-techie partner or maybe a child, because a child will want lots of fancy games and the games don't work brilliantly because of the lack of the GPU. But certainly, my wife, for example, she says I'm allowed to say this, she basically makes phone calls and sends text messages and maybe the odd photo, maybe the odd casual game. And that is it. There's no web browsing. There's none of the power stuff that people all about Symbian listeners and readers like to do. And for that sort of usage, I think this would be absolutely perfect, really. So I'm going to give it some positives. But yes, the hardened all about Symbian readership power users, they're going to absolutely hate this device. They should steer well clear. But do watch the site for the full text review.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. Before we move on, I do just want to point out, I was talking about the sort of equivalence of the specifications. It does have pentaband 3G, it does have Wi-Fi, GPS, and the sort of phone sensors on board. If you compare that to kind of the other low-end handsets that have gone before, things like the 5230 or the C503, it actually has more in the way of hardware specifications, so I think it's a better value device in that sense, but it's also a reflection how those base specifications have almost become standard. Of course, there is a lot that's lower, screen, camera, and everything else, and internal memory is also an interesting one. You will have to buy a memory card separately if you want to do it for anything beyond, a few CDs worth of music. That said, as I say, the value stands out for me, and also it's the design as well. I mean, looking back to the 5230 and the 500, all those design variants which had that kind of quite thick shell and then a sort of thick edge around the device, they weren't all that attractive, whereas I feel the 500 actually has quite a lot going for it. It's not very thin, but we've talked about that on the podcast before. We don't actually mind that particularly. It does feel solid in the hand. It fits nicely into the hand, and it looks reasonably stylish. And the Express On covers, I mentioned those earlier. I mean, there's a bit of customization. You're getting 3 in the box in most cases. In some countries, you're actually getting 5 in the box. So it just feels to me that the design has actually gone on a little bit from those earlier devices. Nonetheless, obviously, it's going to be competing against low-end Android devices for the most part. That's really the only equivalent smartphone. And I think that's a debate that can run and run. I think probably what people need to bear in mind when they think about this, it's not generally going to be power users buying this device. And so yeah. it becomes about ease of use. And as Steve suggested there, about making a basic phone call. And the sort of we're well aware of the relative abilities of phone and battery on Symbian are amongst its strongest points. And so I actually think the 500 is a pretty strong entry in this category. And with the caveats, of course, that Steve was saying about power users probably not going to be in the least bit interested.
Yeah, the screen is capacitive, which is a step forward, but it is plastic rather than glass. It's not even glasses on the X6, which is sort of normal glass. It's definitely not Gorilla Glass. And my one caveat would be that if you then give it to your wife or partner and say, here you are, you know, have a play with this. It can do all the maps and fancy stuff. Just don't push it too far. And thinking they'll be happy, but then a month later after it's in their pocket with their keys and their coins, with just a plastic screen, that's going to look fairly tatty. But then again, I guess that holds the same for any feature phone, so who knows. But we'll move on. This is Bell Week. Now, all four of us have got numerous Symbian 3 stroke Anna devices. I'm guessing we've all tried updating all of them and had a few successes and a few misses where Nokia haven't actually made the update available yet. In my case, the E7, the N8, and the C7 all got the Bell update, and the E6 is still waiting. Let's go around the table. Ewan, what have you upgraded?
Just the C601. N8 I'm keeping as Anna. And the E7, I'm keeping back as the stock, we're not going to give you a name because you're not good enough, whatever 5th edition label that was.
So your N8, you're keeping as Anna so that we can refer back to how Anna used to be, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Rather than as people listening to the podcast will know that I tend to spend more time at the moment over and all about Windows Phone. So for me to have the spread is actually far more useful. The C601 is actually sitting in my pocket, is in day-to-day use. So that has Bell on it. I also think that it's cute and stylish. We'll come to the issues, I guess, in a minute. The N8 is already on Anna and has a copy of where everything was on the C601. And the E7 works fine as it is, and if I need a backup, I want something that's strong and predictable, unlike an Italian captain.
David, what have you upgraded so far?
So far, I have just upgraded the N8, which is actually the only Symbian 3 device I have at the moment, because the only other one I have is the 700, which is already there. Okay. My N8 didn't get its update until today, and so far I've the process went fine. I haven't killed my device, which I'm glad to say, because whenever you plug a device in to do a firmware update, you always have somewhat of a sense of foreboding. I do have something of a casualty list of what was not preserved in the update. All of my access points, which means mobile data and Wi-Fi, were gone. My Mail for Exchange account was gone. And we knew that any applications installed to the C drive would be gone. However, I have quite a lot of applications which I really did not think were installed on the C drive, including things like Gravity, Cutebox, etc. They are gone as well. There's very few of my third-party applications that are left over.
I think any applications which have hooks into the C drive for any reason, I suspect that the OS will think, okay, well, I can't run these, it hasn't got all its bits, and you will have to reinstall those. I think a lot of people have found that, David, but in fact, I was pleasantly surprised to see how many of the applications I had installed on it actually were preserved. I'm quite used to, as in the old days, if you do a firmware update and everything's gone, you basically start from scratch. And there is a certain school of thought, we'll probably come to this in a moment, which says that you should actually do a hard reset before these updates anyway, so that you have a perfectly in tune, perfectly optimized operating system. You want to say something?
I do. I mean, I'm with David. For some reason, the only two applications made it through the upgrade for me, and that was the screenshot application we all use and all about Symbian, and Tetris. Everything else, nuked and gone. And also, I mean, interestingly, their save files were still there for some of them. And I think I'm going to be really brutal here. I think this proves why Symbian has to move on. I think this is where the ecosystem has fallen down. On every other mobile OS platform that I've updated in the last 6 months, you plug in, it backs it up, it upgrades the operating system, it puts all your stuff back again. From the point of the non-tech user, which, as we all know, is a large part of the Symbian operating system user base, they don't want to sit and have to go through the Ovi store again. They don't want to have to sit and try and remember what they had on. It should have been done automatically. Now, the other complaint I had was that when I went to open the Ovi store, the first thing that popped up was, oh, by the way, there's a new version of the Ovi store, or the Nokia store, or whatever we're calling it for nowadays. Why don't you go and download it? Excuse me, I've just uploaded and updated the greatest operating system known to man, trademarked. And you need me to go and download something else. And then you get that, and it's incredibly slow. And one of the issues that I've always had with every version of the Nokia store is it doesn't like my Wi-Fi. I can only download over 3G for the applications. And I have to sit and I have to click on them individually to download them again and go through the list and watch them all install. So although the update maybe only took about 30, 35 minutes, I then spent another hour and a half putting back what should have been done automatically. And the question here is whether we apologize for that, whether we just go, well, that's the way things are, or whether we would hope that people would strive for more. And I think, you know, we're still picking up the pieces from when the way was lost, you know, 2 or 3 years ago with Symbian. And I was expecting the experience of the upgrade to be far better than what I saw. I'll talk about Bell separate later once we'll touch on that, but I was not impressed
In fairness, Ewan, every other firmware update for Symbian 3, S65th edition, I mean, going back 2-3 years now, every single update has been completely painless and hasn't lost a thing. This is a huge, huge update. I mean, Bell is literally a complete refreshing of the whole operating system, and the only way they can make it work was to forget over the air, forget preservation of everything, simply to completely relay the whole of the system disk and then put on as much of your data and bits and pieces as they could. And I can see why they've done it. I think it will cause quite a number of headaches for people over on Nokia support over the next few weeks and months. Rafe, what have you upgraded, and do you agree with any of this?
Hold on a second, Steve. Let me just jump in there, because you actually have hit the nail on the head there. Every previous version of the update has been smooth and painless. The user expectation is that you will just switch over. You will just move over. Now, Nokia Store has a list of the applications on the device. The device itself has a list of applications installed on the device. The information is in the device. It's there to be taken. Nokia have not sweated the pixels on this one. They've done 80-20. They've got 80% of the updates. We'll take over some of the data. We'll make it though, and you get a brand new operating system, and then you finish the rest off yourself. That's not what is expected of a consumer device. You wouldn't ever see that on Apple. Apple went from 3 to 4 to 5 quite painlessly and got everything back. Windows went from 7.0 to 7.1 and 7.1 to 7.5 from Noro to Magel quite painlessly. Android, you just have to run a huge, great big Linux cat command, and I'm sure David will tell us that it's a walk in the park. So Nokia did not sweat the pixels here. And I think, seriously, Rafe will now agree with one of us, but I think Nokia dropped the ball.
Oh, just before Rafe cuts in, I just wanted to say that the reason that people like Apple, for example, Apple with their iPhones can do such smooth updates is because they've got a big seamless chunk of memory, and they've got plenty of memory to load an update in and to process on the device. And that's what Symbian has had up to now. But even the Symbian 3 devices with the most internal CDisk space, you know, 100 megabytes or so, or 80 megabytes, that's not enough for this size of update. And as I'm sure Rafe will confirm, it's the architecture of how Symbian devices are built. I mean, it simply couldn't happen that way. You had to relay the whole thing, and that's why it's been so painful. Rafe?
Yes, well, I should probably say that I've updated my Nokia E6, mainly because that's a day-to-day device for me, but also the Nokia X7 that's available on a couple of devices. In one sense, I thought the update went pretty smoothly, and I was really impressed by the number of product codes it was available on. I mean, not quite universally on the SIM-free devices, but pretty close, and actually about half the operator branded devices seem to have it as well. And you compare what happened with Anna, where it took months and months for everyone to get the update. They seem to have done a lot better this time around. There are still some exceptions, and yes, I think Nokia support are pretty busy. Nokia 500, for example, that's not available, although it should be in a few weeks' time. But, you know, in one sense, great to get this update, and to unprecedented in Symbian history, because this is a big update. And we're talking about devices in the case of the N8 are more than a year old, and getting what's, you know, a really big software update, really visually changing things. I mean, if I was looking at other mobile devices, I think I'd probably describe this as the biggest update to an operating system I've seen on any device anywhere. Turning to the update itself, yes, I had some of the issues that have already been talked about, you know, the lost settings and the lost applications. in one sense, I'm not too bothered by those personally, but I don't think it's a great consumer experience. And the bigger problem for me is, in some ways, if you're going to have that happen, you need to be very clear with consumers that that will be the case. And I'm not sure Nokia were. They communicated the C drive stuff pretty well, but the disappearing applications from E and some of the disappearing settings less well. Yes, my data was restored for contacts and calendar and that kind of thing. Great. But there were plenty of missing pieces, and it's a pretty common story. If you've installed some applications, you are going to have to do about an hour or two afterwards getting things back to where it were. I wasn't too bad because I don't have that many third-party applications installed, and some of the ones I didn't bother to reinstall because they were gone and I wasn't using them regularly. What Ewan said about updating a Nokia store, yes, that really shouldn't happen. I mean, it's a fault of the way the software updates are put together, and the same could be said about Nokia Social. Version 1.5 is out and 1.3 was in this update, but I'll also agree with Steve and say this is kind of down to the architecture of Symbian, and is kind of the legacy that we've left from having an operating system that's been around for 10 plus years. Is that an excuse? No, not really, but given the circumstances and the context of this update, it wasn't really going to be any other way. I think it's made more complex by having Qt and QML coming in at the same time, as Steve was talking about the lack of memory in terms of overlaying these updates and things like that. And so part of me goes, yeah, that's all fine. But part of me also goes, it's not really good enough. And it's kind of this kind of issue, I think, that speaks to why Stephen Elop and his cohorts said, this is why we need to move on from Symbian. Could it be fixed? Yes, absolutely. You could spend a lot of time going over this. You could change some of the hardware requirements. You could change the way software updates are done. But, a lot of these decisions were taken 3, 4 or even more years ago, which is why we're having the issues here. So for all the temptation to sit here complaining about it and saying this isn't being fixed, and I think one of the bigger ones for me was the fact you can't update if you don't have a Mac. If you have a Mac and using the Mac update software, and that applies to Linux too, of course, before David jumps in. part of me goes, why can't I get this over the air if that's what I want to do? Especially as you could do it with a Wi-Fi connection. And again, it comes back to the size of the update.
Yeah.
But I have to say, the other part of me goes, I'm very relieved to get this update. And it's fantastic to finally have Bell running on all these devices because it is such a massive improvement. So I think my verdict would probably be, actually, I think Nokia probably done this as well as they could have hoped to, given the context. That doesn't mean it shouldn't have been better, though.
Yeah. There were certainly a huge number of positives in the story on the site, which has now got over 500 comments as we record this. I went through the whole changelog, and it's pretty extensive, really. Having said that, for all the speed-ups and the optimizations and the tweaked applications and this function and the notifications bar and the different lock screen, et cetera, there are a few negatives and a few issues. And I think the biggest one that I keep picking up from comments, Rafe, maybe David can comment on this as well at some point, email notifications are somehow missing. On Symbian Anna, you'd get an email and the little LED would start flashing, and you get the sound notification there, the ding. But there's nothing that appears on the lock screen here. So is this something that they've overlooked or something which will arrive in an update very soon? Rafe?
I haven't actually tested this extensively, so I'm going by what I've seen in the comments. But yes, it does appear to be the case. It might be worth rootling around in the settings, but I'm pretty sure this is something that will get fixed. I mean, it's worth saying with any of these updates, there's always another update on the horizon. And it's quite clear from what Nokia said, there's already a couple of things that they've spotted in Bell that need to be fixed. Related to this kind of email widget thing is just the widgets in general. I think people are upset that, having seen various promotional videos for Bell featuring various widgets, they're not actually in the final release. And also, if people have been trying, shall we say, the leaked versions of Bell that have been around on the internet, again, there were more widgets available. And particularly things like the calendar widget, which is actually displays less information than the Anna one did and isn't triple height like the new email widget is on Bell. And there are various others. Bookmarks, for example, is another, and I think contacts as well, and the small version of the music player. So all those are kind of little bits and pieces, some of which are going to be fixed via small updates delivered by SW Update, some of which may not get fixed. But yes, this email notification does seem to be one of the more serious issues.
Yeah, the whole point of having a notifications pane that you swipe down Android style is that it lists all the things that have arrived. You know, there's a new text message, you've got a missed call, there should be in there, you've got two new emails. There's no mention of email there, no little symbol up in the top status bar, no mention of the lock screen, unless you absolutely have the official Nokia Bell email widget on your first home screen. You wouldn't even know you've got a new email, and that just seems a complete fail to me. David, any comments on this?
Yeah, well, like Riff, I haven't had time to test because I got my N8 updated less than 90 minutes ago.
You've had no email since then.
But I've just dug into the settings and looked at what's available for the blinking light notification. And yeah, it is only missed call and new message. No email setting at all.
Yeah, and I should also add in, I've just had some emails come in, and I've actually got mine set up to have a sound alert, and that is working just fine. But yes, the notification light itself, you can't set. And I think that was actually the case in Anna as well for email. So this notification issue, which I can remember now, I've talked about in the past, is something I was hoping would be better fixed in Bell. And I think particularly given this introduction of this notification pane, it's kind of a shame that that wasn't integrated or email wasn't integrated into that. Because other than that, you know, the new notification pane actually works really well. It's a great way to set up Wi-Fi to see new text messages and missed calls, as well as, you know, switch things to silent quickly or turn Wi-Fi or mobile data or Bluetooth on or off. So I guess it's inevitable that there are going to be things that aren't quite as we'd like them.
It's fair to say that the notifications pane here, welcome though it is a bit of a pale shadow of what's currently in, for example, the latest Android and the latest iPhone. So where you've got the ability to not only see everything, but have applications plug into that and be able to swipe away individual notifications. So it's clearly got a long, long way to go. Obviously, there'll be a Bell service pack, whatever, Rafe. Let's just hope it's not too far down the road.
Can I just pick up on some of these issues? Steve, are we really saying Bell has a long way to go and we're going to give it another 6 months? Steve?
I would hope that there would be little individual patches for some of these issues within the next 2 or 3 weeks, but that's maybe me being optimistic.
Because I don't think we can wait 6 months. This has been a long time coming. It's been through a lot of testing. I do remember seeing certain members of Nokia and their PR team carrying the C601 back in November. So, you know, Bell has been out there. And I still find it amazing that when there's been so much focus placed on the UI changes, that I'm seeing 7 different font sizes coming off one of the home screens. So if you put your popular contacts, if you put your mailbox, if you have some shortcut icons, you've then got the network name, you've then got the time indicator, you then swipe down the notifications bar, and you've got another 2 different font sizes in there, plus you've got the bolding as well, but we can settle with that, which means that in one swipe I see 7 different font sizes with no consistency over the main new sparkly bits of the Bell interface. And It's this consistency that's annoying me. Steve, I'm going to put money in the old Scion box.
Great.
You'll remember that, you know, we had style guides for programmers working in OPL and C++ back in the 2.3.7. And you were told, this is how you do it. This is how it's done. You make everything look the same. This is how your menu's laid out. This is how your diamond menu will work. This is how it all works. And everybody followed that in the built-in applications, in the first-party applications, and the third-party applications. I would love to know if there's one of these for Bell. Because either it's there and they've not used it, or it's there and it's an absolute mess. I mean, it's, again, it comes back to sweating the pixels. It's just, it feels to me that it needs another go through. It needs a style Nazi up there. They've got, you know, we're really close to what it looks like on other platforms. That'll do. Let's go. It's been far too long in the coming for you to excuse something like, you know, how thin the indicator is on the Wi-Fi signal and how thick the line is on the outside of the battery. And I know that some people out there or even listening in the rest of this podcast are going, well, that's incredibly picky, but you've only got 30 seconds in the store to try and convince someone to buy that. If they look at it and they go, well, that looks a bit messy, I'm not quite sure why, it's because they've got all these different font sizes and sprawls everywhere, you've lost the sale straight away. It doesn't matter how nice the notifications bars is. There's no consistency in dialogue placement either. Some of the menu dialogues are popping up at the bottom, some are popping up in the middle. I'm sorry, what does the line in the style guide say? They should all do that.
Yeah, on the font issue, I cannot believe a Windows Phone 7 fan is criticizing the Symbian world for weird fonts.
It's consistency. If you look at it, you have the main menu, the sub menu, and the items. These all scale down in the font, but they have a consistency. And because it goes over all the applications, the first party, the third parties, all of that, it's the same everywhere. You don't have that in Bell. You have big, you have little, and they can mean the same thing in different applications in different places. If you call up the email widget, have a look at that, then have a look at the MP3 player widget. You know, they shouldn't be different sizes.
Yeah, one thing I did want to mention, this is particularly pertinent to the Symbian 3 and Anna devices which would get updated to Bell, because I've played with the 700, I've played with the 701, both with native Bell and with 1 gigahertz processors and the new hardware platform. I had no problems at all in terms of swiping around the interface and tapping around. With the N8 on Bell, much as I love Bell and much as I love some of the improvements, I have noticed that sometimes I tap the back icon or tap the main application menu icon and nothing happens. And I suspect there are still optimizations here to be made under the hood, shoehorning Bell onto the devices with the slower processor and with less RAM. And that, of course, does have some consequences, but I do hope they can fix that in a patch at some point, because it just needs a little tweaking, I think, under the hood. Rafe?
Yes, I think that's a fair point, Steve. There's clearly still room for improvement in the update for the existing devices. That's probably somewhat inevitable when you're updating a whole pool of devices that are already out there and which are actually, in terms of specifications, slightly lower than the sort of, if you like, second generation Symbian 3 device to the one that came with Bell out of the box. I've been listening to all of these complaints and moans, and part of me sort of goes, yes, I agree with all of them, and I've had many of the same ones, and clearly all our listeners have as well, judging by the comments. But I also go, it kind of strikes me as typical humans, typical, you know, people going, as soon as they get the update, they start complaining about what's wrong with it. And I, part of me also wants to go, actually, I think we should celebrate the fact that this update has arrived at all. And it does significantly, I think, improve the ease of use and the usability of these older Symbian 3 devices.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, there are plenty of problems with it. But actually, I think this has been one of the smoother Symbian updates that have been delivered. And perhaps a problem for Nokia is that the comparison with other mobile platforms is that, yes, people have a higher expectation now, but this has been delivered universally across all the Symbian 3 devices, well, with the exception of the Nokia 500,
yeah.
And that's a few weeks away. You compare that to some of the complaints you get from the Android world where manufacturers aren't updating devices or it doesn't go wrong in the fragmentation. Actually, if you're looking at Symbian 3, ignoring the older Symbian devices, which perhaps is a bit unfair to do, but they do come from a different era in a sense. Actually, Nokia have done a pretty good job here, and so I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. But yeah, you know, human psychology being what it is, people never think about what they've got, the good things. They only complain about what's missing. And I do wonder whether we've been a bit guilty of doing that on this podcast.
Well, let's put in some balance. To finish off the podcast, let's look at each of us around the table, our biggest highlight of Nokia Bell or Symbian Bell on devices so far. And I'd like to start. This is something that's absolutely delighted me. And that, okay, yes, we've got the new, much heralded home screen and lock screen and notifications, blah, blah, blah. But you go into a program you've used for the last 2 years, perhaps, as a third-party application, all of a sudden it looks brand new. The way well-written native Symbian programs and even Qt programs, they inherit UI elements from Nokia Bell, and they suddenly appear completely as if they were part of Bell, and they look totally different, totally facelifted, and that has really delighted me. Applications like Podcatcher, for example, works really, really well, and you think, wow, is this a new version? No, it's the same version, but it's picked up UI elements. So well done there, everyone concerned. Ewan, what you next?
Well, I don't think I'm going to be as shallow, but that might be surprising. Negativity, just very briefly, I think it's because we have set the bar so high all about Symbian. You know, this is a platform that we know can do really, really well, and it has done here. So when we have that sort of momentary, oh, what's going on? You know, it's human spirit. It really knocks us for six. But you know what, like, and Steve, I'm going to pick up on that last point that you had there as one of my highlights. Mobi Pocket Reader has not been updated since a beta version of the Nokia N95. No yeah. Touch, 320/240 screen, you know, tiny capabilities of the device. It still runs under Bell. It still runs on a touchscreen, which it was never designed for. It's taken multiple screen sizes. And until Amazon decided that Kindle would be a good idea, it's like I crossed my fingers when I ran Mobi Pocket, because part of me went, if this doesn't run, I am going to cry. Instead, big cheer. So I think that, you know, that goes on, you know, how high we expect the coding standard to be and how high it actually is. Look, things I really like. Okay, shallow time. You can put your icons in alphabetical order. I mean, that's it. I mean, I've been wanting that since Palmos 1.0. And it's there. Yay! And you can toggle it back again if you want to. And it's just really enjoying things like you can search your applications and search for an application that searches through all the subfolders. But the biggest thing, and I didn't notice this till about 12 hours ago, was that there's two light levels on your standby screen. There's the big bright one where, for example, the time is completely filled in. It's nice and it's bright. But the problem is when you've got that on a bedside cabinet, that's a little bit distracting at night. So it actually not only turns down the brightness, but with the wonderful CBD screen on the C601, it actually halves the number of pixels that are used on the time, which makes it look slightly grey, slightly darker, still as power efficient, but now far more useful as a night clock. And again, see, this is where sweating the pixels works. Somebody's went, that's used a lot at night, but it's too bright. Let's work out a way to tone it down and to make it look nicer and still look stylish. There's lots of little touches like through there, and you know that the alpha order are the ones that are picked up for me. And it's these sort of things that people will intrinsically and subconsciously take note of and go, that's why I like that.
I think we've now officially worn out the phrase sweating the pixels on this podcast, Ewan, so you're not allowed to use it again.
Oh.
David, what has delighted you about Bell so far?
Mainly the user interface refresh, and just picking up what Ewan said, having the alphabetical icons and actually combining that with the list view. Yes, it's slightly Windows Phone 70, but it's actually just a lot better because you don't have to sort of remember strange arcane directory structures. You can just say, okay, I just have to remember the name of the app, and I'm just going to scroll through alphabetical order until I get there. That is just... This was the first thing I noticed when I was playing with Bell at Nokia World. And it's such a small... It sounds like such a small, mundane thing, but it just... I think it's just going to make you using the phone so much smoother. And also, just maybe disingenuously, slightly Androidy-like, in that we can now have all different sizes of widgets. And I think it's going to give people more sense of engagement with their phone because they can have things just how they like it and just how they want it to be. And we're going to enjoy looking at and using it more.
Yeah, Rafe, have we left any good things for you to highlight there?
Yeah, there's two things I want to highlight, one of which is the kind of new memory management, which from my initial playing with it seems to be working incredibly well on these older devices, actually more so than I expected. So that means you can multitask across multiple applications quite easily. And for the Symbian power use, I think we all know that's one of the things that Symbian does very well indeed. The other thing I want to pick out on is UI as well, but a more general comment that the introduction of the bottom toolbar and the status bar thinned down at the top, and the sort of the way menus work and the way dialogues work actually mean that Symbian feels like it's almost finally got rid of the legacy of it being a non-touch platform to start with. So the soft keys that we had sitting at the bottom of the screen, they work perfectly well, but they were there both in dialogues and also obviously in menus because that was a reflection of what it had been like on the original S60 third edition and even going back to Series 60. And so a lot of that legacy of UI was hanging around, and Bell feels like that's gone. And so we've got a UI that is touch first and foremost, and that works very well. And I was actually surprised how well it works on the E6, which still has the D-pad, of course, and the ability to use it, you know, without really using the touchscreen all that much. You are going to use it for getting at the bottom toolbar. So for me, that is the big positive of Bell. You know, it moves Symbian as a UI right up to date in terms of its touch first, whereas it's felt a little bit before like you could see the legacy of the old devices there. Now, there is still some of that there, but the sort of design patterns feel like they've been significantly updated. And for me, that's the single strongest element of the Bell update.
Yeah. I think there's plenty of positives there, as well as some of the caveats and the things which are not quite there, or things we're looking forward to being fixed in the future. There's still an updating and evolving story. If you look at those stories on All About Symbian's front page at the moment, maybe as you listen to this, maybe they'll now be completed. But with hundreds and hundreds of comments, you'll see that there is a complete wide range of experiences. I'm sure if you listen to this, you probably been through Bell for most of your devices, if you've got more than one, and you have your own opinions, do please comment on the site. Do please send us tweets and emails and keep us posted. And we'll, of course, come back to Bell and come back to how we're getting on 1 week on in the very next All About Symbian Insight. This is going to run and run, I suspect, as we head up to MWC and a possible, I don't know, maybe a new device. Who knows? Who knows what will happen? Rafe will be on the ground for that, and we'll keep you posted with MWC towards the end of the month. But we're out of time, guys, so a goodbye from you and Spence.
Goodbye for now.
And from Up in Hell, David Gilson.
Goodbye, everybody.
And from Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody, and thanks for listening.